started smoking. I ran her off the shoulder, and now the axle's broken. It made a sound that cracked my heart in half, and with only half a half pint of vodka left, I'm up against it all, like a leaf against the wind. Welcome back. This is WOBC Oberlin 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio, and you're listening to The Auto Era. And I'm Bernie Golias, your host for the evening. And this evening we have a guest by the name of Robert Ebert, professor emeritus from Baldwin Wallace College, professor of economics, and he's also the secretary of the Society of Automotive Historians and member of the Antique Automobile Club of America. So, Robert, we were talking about Studebakers and Garford, and there's still maybe a little bit more you'd like to talk about, and there's still a lot of history, and it obviously cannot be covered in an hour on this show for the Lorain, Elyria area. So what would you like to talk about? And also, before you get going, if anyone would like to call in and ask any questions, it's 440-775-8139. So, where would you like to begin?
Well, probably should say a little bit more about Willie's involvement with auto production in Elyria. After they stopped building the Garford automobile, remember they were still building the Garford truck, but they went into the production of Willie's Knight automobiles. However, they were fairly expensive as built in Elyria, probably because at that time there wasn't an assembly line technique, really, that was being used there. And over a two-year period in roughly 1913-14, they only built about 240 of those Willie's Knights, and they were in the over $2,000 bracket. And production of Willie's Knights was moved then to Toledo, and for a number of years, automobiles, per se, were not built in Elyria. The automobile parts were built, and in fact, in World War I, aircraft engines were built by Willie's in the Elyria plant. But then in 1927, Willie's introduced the Falcon Knight. It was another Knight-engined automobile, and it was actually priced a couple of $100s above the Willie's Knight. By this time, the Willie's Knights were selling for in the neighborhood of $1,100, And the Falconite was priced above it. It was one of those very puzzling things that auto historians never did totally figure out as to why Willys was building both the Falconite and the Willys Knight at that time. The Falconite was not real successful, and in 2 years they only built about 16,000 of them, and by early 1929, production of the Falconite had stopped, and then Willys just used the Liria facilities for the production of parts.
And who were they competing against? Was that a mid-sized car, the Willys Knight?
Yes, yes. They were competing in the sort of the Buick, maybe Pontiac kind of level.
So we have the reasoning why they called it Willys Knight or Stearns Knight or Falcon Knight. The K-N-I-G-H-T was a engine.
Yes.
And so you want to maybe explain why these firms had to call it, you know, like Willys slash Knight. There was a reason they had to do that.
Yes, and I'm not enough of an engineer to tell you all the details, but the Knight engine was what is called, or what was called, a sleeve-valved engine, somewhat different in design than most internal combustion engines at the time. Originally developed, I believe it was in Britain, and John North Willys bought U.S. rights for that engine in order to build those cars.
So that's a good reason why they have to call them. Stearns had the same issue.
I mean, yes, and by the way, Willys took controlling interest of Stearns Knight.
So when did actually, do you recall the exact time where Willys really started building up the factory in Toledo?
Yes, in the early 19-teens.
About 1916 or something?
In that era, and I can't tell you the exact production, but they were really turning out the automobiles, and for a while some people thought that they would actually be competing on a level of Ford in production. He embraced the assembly line technique.
Yeah, they just tore that plant down, didn't they, about a year or two ago? I know they tore the smokestack down.
Yes, yes, they did.
And did Willys? How long did Willys actually last? I mean, the man, John North Willys, did he get involved with anything else other than building up that firm? Did he didn't sell out to anybody, did he?
No, he didn't sell out, but he did become part of government, and I can't remember exactly the position he took, but he was an ambassador to some country and got more and more involved with the politics of the era and governmental issues, and pretty much faded out of the Willys Overland Company.
Now, the area here, Lorain, Elyria, also has a lot of other cars that were built here. And even to this day, there's cars being built here. And probably one of the most popular one is a Ford.
Yes, indeed. And there in the mid-late 50s, Ford built the Lorain assembly plant. And, there's about a dozen different vehicles that were made there. There were Thunderbirds made there. There were Fairlanes made there. There were Falcons made there. There were Econoline vans built there. And many more Ford products were built there. And by the time they closed the plant a few years ago, there had been a total of almost 15 million automobiles that had been produced at that Lorain assembly plant. It was about, about a 4 million square foot plant. It was quite an extensive operation that Ford had. But as the auto industry began to change, and as the auto industry began to become more efficient, Ford eventually found that it did not need the Lorain assembly plant and consolidated into the Avon Lake plant, which they had bought from Fruithof. And Fruithof had built trailers there, and then Ford took it over and eventually about tripled the size of that plant as well, and built some vehicles there, but then ultimately moved Ford Econoline production there, which has continued However, now they are phasing out the Econoline production and going to be building Ford medium-duty trucks, which up to this time had been being built in Mexico, and the production is being transferred to Avon Lake.
Now, Ford is still the largest employer in Lorain. Is that correct, or is there U.S. Steel?
No, Ford is still the largest private employer. Not there's governmental units that have more, but they're with roughly 1,700, maybe 1,800 employees. They're the largest private employer.
So, do you see anything happening here in the near future with Ford? Or do you ever get any pick up any information, so to speak, where there might be additional expansions? I mean, you know, I don't know. History kind of repeats itself; they come and go. You know,
the production of these medium-duty trucks involves the investment of a couple hundred million dollars in that plant, and it has created some issues with the United Auto Workers because it was uncertain how many jobs were going to be maintained at that plant. And through a number of initiatives of the UAW working with the company, they've worked out a system whereby it'll be in that range of 1,600 to 1,800 roughly workers that will be employed there building the medium-duty trucks.
So the automobile industry has definitely helped build this area like it has with Cleveland as an industrial base. And we see potential future development coming along with expansions. I know a lot of plants get old, and sometimes they, with the way companies have to operate to remain competitive on a global scale, they sometimes find it's necessary to go overseas. And I think we see that a lot with Ford and General Motors now. Going into China, I guess Buick is their biggest selling item over there in China for General Motors. But, you know, we still have an excellent employee base here. And what do you see for the future? You're an economist.
Well, I don't see a lot of expansion in employment in the automobile industry as we know it today. Going back 100 years, there was one point at which Henry Ford employed about 100,000 people at his River Rouge plant in Detroit. Yes, he used assembly line techniques, a lot of automated equipment for that era, but he still needed a lot of people to build the automobiles. Today, at the River Rouge plant in Detroit, it's less than 2,000 workers, and they build in the neighborhood of 200,000 to 300,000 vehicles a year. So what you find as you go through automobile plants is the use of a lot more automated machinery, a lot more computer-operated things, and so the potential for employing a lot more people in the production of automobiles is fairly limited.
Well, there's still hope.
Well, there's still hope, and the best thing that can happen is that the market expands and that cars sell well, and as a result, maybe firms have to add a shift here or there or build a new plant here or there. But we've come through a very rough several years where from production of 16 to 17 million cars or sale of 16 to 17 million cars a year in the United States.